back in the Sermon on the Mount, and today we finish up the last paragraph of the sermon proper, and we enter into a different phase, the final phase of the sermon in Matthew chapter 7, and we're going to tackle that in the new year, because we have something else planned for you in December. So this is the last talk in the Sermon on the Mount until we get into January. We're going to kick off the year with some really, really powerful things Jesus says at the end that sort of take a little different flavor. Very important, though. And this talk introduces that theme. So we need to look at it. Matthew, remember how the sermon started? Because it's important to know how it started. Jesus says, remember what I'm about to tell you. I didn't come to abolish the law and the prophets. That stands for the Old Testament. I have not come to abolish them. I've come to fulfill them. And then we get to verse 12, which is the last verse in the paragraph we're in now. It's the end of the sermon. It's the beginning. It's the end. Whatever you wished others to do to you, do also to them. That is the law and the prophets. You say, how do you fulfill the Old Testament? Verse 12, you do to others what you would want them to do to you. That's it. Okay, I say that's it. And so this last paragraph concludes with that verse. And so this is the whole paragraph, remember? And then there's don't judge, okay? And then there is, oh, God, I'm going to wear black, we're not yellow. Let's see if I can do it. I doubt it. But there you go. Okay, so judge not is at the top, and then you have down here that verse to love one another. So whatever Jesus has in mind in the judging idea, love is supposed to be the dominant theme. So you say, I don't want to be a judgmental person. Then you got to be more loving. Okay, boils down to that. Love is how you do everything in the sermon. Comes down to love. So I see verses 1 to 12 as a unit. And if you see it as a unit, all connecting to each other, then you interpret the verses in it in that context. And that's what I have done for you. And today, if you haven't even been here for I don't know how many talks I've given already in this little 12 verses, today you're going to get a summary of it, and we're going to conclude it. So we'll tie up this, put all the pieces together, walk you through the argument of this text very simply. So just stay with me. Here we go. So Jesus has invited us into the kingdom, and he shows us how to live. That was 5:20. I didn't come to abolish the law, I came to fulfill it. Let me show you how to live it. Okay? That we've called the good life. Okay? And it turns out, you get to verse 12 in chapter 7, it's a life of love. That's the good life. And so you can be overwhelmed. You're overwhelmed by its truths that we've learned in. There's been some mind-boggling truths. We see how God thinks about people, how he sees people, and you realize he's such a loving God, and all of the truths that he's provided for us are out of love. It's all based in love. So when you get to the end of the sermon, Jesus is going to say, it's very tempting when you learn all these truths to manage them in a way that's not loving. That's what chapter 7 is about. You can be judgmental with these truths. Hey, you're not living it. And you can condemn people. Or you can try to control people with it. Religion tends to do both of those. Condemn people who aren't living it. And try to control people who aren't living it with their judgment. And our world's experiencing that in a very, very powerful way. So verses 7, 1 to 2, here's what Jesus says. Let's start. Don't do that. Don't condemn people and don't judge people with all the wonderful, loving truths that I've given you. That's essentially what he's saying. You know why? Because you will be judged by that same judgment. So that's sort of the beginning of this talk. Okay, don't write people off. I always want you to remember when it comes to this, Jesus says in the next few verses, I always want you to remember, you got your own problems. One of the reasons you shouldn't be judgmental is that you have problems too. Judgmental people miss it. They miss that. So you can't do that. In fact, I need you to be able, remember what Jesus says here? I need you to be able to see clearly. Get the things, before you go checking out the little sawdust in somebody's eye, make sure you get the load-bearing beam out of your eye so that you can see clearly. 2, help your brother if he needs it. You don't condemn him. We're about helping each other. You do that best when you realize you have your own problems and you're humble. So you're generous at first with your judgment because that's how you're going to be judged. But then you're also humble. You approach people very, very humbly. All right? And then there's another one. And here comes this verse that's sort of strange thrown in here. Very proverbial. But if you connect it to the context, you go, what am I supposed to do with someone's eye if I see something in somebody's eye? Well, be very careful there. Don't take what I've been saying. Don't take everything I've told you, all the holy things and all the special pearls of truth that I've given you. Don't become a holy roller and a pearl pusher. And jam things down their throat. You know why? Because that is not how they get fed. Nobody's nourished by you jamming it down my throat. It doesn't matter how holy it is. And it doesn't matter how precious it is. The truths we carry and manage that we've gained from being in partnership with Jesus are not to be jammed down people's throat. Otherwise, you will turn them into dogs and hogs and they'll attack you. It's not attack we're after. It's not defiance. So the idea here is, you're not force feeding people or always trying to fix people. We can do that. And so what happens is you become arrogant and you become demanding and you just turn people into dogs and hogs, and that's just not how Jesus values people. It's not how anyone does. So what do you do then? What do we do with each other? With each other? Well, we said this last week. We ask. We seek. And we knock. Now, I know this little triad is very familiar, and we almost always just immediately connect it to prayer. Jesus doesn't do that here. He actually uses, believe it or not, the illustration, baby dedication day, a parenting illustration. Your kid asks you for something. You give it to him. Because asking and seeking and knocking is how we relate to each other. It's a very dignified way. Willard calls it, remember I showed you, the power of request. The way we get along with each other is a lot of asking of each other. And most of us, and the reason he calls it the power of request, like it's this universal force in the world when somebody asks you something, you tend to want to do it. I mean, most times when we're asked to do something we want to do, it's the reason why we try to stay away from people who ask us a lot of things. Because we know we're probably going to end up doing it. All right? So Jesus says there's a lot of power in asking. That's far better for people than demanding. That truth is so powerful. And so what asking and seeking and knocking set up is a relational dynamic. People who do that for each other pursue each other. See, when you judge people, treat them like a dog and a hog. You condemn them, you write them off, you push them away. And Jesus says, that's not the direction I want you going. I want you pursuing people. See, I got to show up at your door. I got to pursue you, seek. Right? Ask and it'll be given. Seek, find, knock and it's opened. This is the way we approach people. This is the general way that we approach people. Otherwise, you end up demanding instead of asking, hunting instead of seeking. Oh, you wait till I get a hold of you. All right, and then instead of knocking, we kick a door in. And when you do that, nobody responds well to that. All right, nobody responds well to that. So rather than being those things, I'd much rather be requested of. I'd much rather be sought after. And I'd much rather somebody knock and hope I invite them into my life and not push my way into their life. So Jesus says, don't treat people like dogs and hogs. You know, open your door real fast and throw a holy pearl or a holy truth out there. Because that's just not how it works. Now, it's very tempting to do that. By the way, this is your home. You say, I'd like to see my home change. I'd like to see a spouse or a kid or I'd like to see my society change. I'd like to see the school I go to change. I'd like to see the society and the political thing. I'd like to see it all change. Well, how do you think you're going to do that? You know how we've been doing it? Treating people like dogs and hogs. You think that's going to work? Not working. Never will work. It's not how you deal with people. I'd like to see my job culture change. You're not going to do it by demanding it. Nothing changes that way. So you can't give up. Because I need you asking and seeking and knocking. People matter enough to pursue them, not write them off. So you can't give up. And you can't shut up, because at some point you have to communicate. You just have to be, there's just the real art of approach and the power of request. Now, some things take time when you're dealing with people. We all know that. I mean, people have had to put up with me for 59 years. Just like they've had to put up with you. For 59 years. And you have been much slower to change in a lot of important ways than it would have been nice to see you come around a whole lot faster. But isn't it true about our lives? We get better over time, but it's slow. And we put up with each other. We ask and we seek and we knock. And you're wore out by those three things. Jesus says, wear out doing it. People matter enough. All right. Some things just take a lot of time. How about you in your life? How many things would you like to see different about your life? I wish I was like this. I wish I was like that. I wish I was more like that. And you've probably gotten maybe a little bit more like that in time, but you're not where you really want to be, but you know how hard it is to get there. You know how hard it is to get there. That's the same with other people. You want them to be this. You want your spouse to be this. You want your kid to be that. You want your boss to be that. You want. It takes a long time to get to these places. Because there's mindsets you have to overcome. There's habits you have to overcome. There's experiences if you've had that we've got to fight through. How much garbage in your life do we have to mess with to get you to a place where you're the person you want to be and the person the people around you need you to be? Takes time. I'll tell you a little bit more about this in a minute, but we were in Cuba and we were ministering with a guy who's trying to reach the country. And, you know, most of you probably haven't been to Cuba. It's a rough place to be. The pastor kept telling us, there's a mindset here that is so hard to penetrate because of the way, the history of the country and the way it's been led. And the people are indoctrinated in a way. And it's so hard to get them to see what could be. But here's a man on that island who loves, who smiles, who reaches individuals, who slowly but surely doing. You say, when's he going to reach Cuba? Probably not in our lifetime. How long do you ask, seek, and pursue if you wanted to reach a country? Long time. You just keep doing it because it takes a long time for people to change. Don't bail on your marriage. Don't bail on your kids. Don't bail on anything or people just because. My wife is spatially challenged and always has been. I have had to arrange the garage in a way that she doesn't destroy things when she pulls in there, because she will. And there are multiple reasons, and I will tell you that it will take divine intervention for this to change in her life. Truly, God will have to show up. So there are times when I've had to rearrange the garage to deal with this spatial challenge, and I've also had to walk her out there at times and say, darling, do you see what you're destroying here when you pull in like this? Or do you see how close you came to destroying that when you pulled in? Okay, baby. There are many times I have to go get the keys. I don't even tell her she's in a horrible place. I just go get the keys, and I back the car out and pull it in the way it ought to be in there, because that's what you do for a lot of people, and probably for a long time. The odds are, the very real odds are, she will never, ever become spatially gifted. But I pulled her out there the other day, a couple weeks ago, actually, and I said, honey, this is what I've done. When you pull in here, I just need you to be a little bit more conscious so that we don't have, bigger problems. So if you could, and I want to tell you honestly, this was an ask, this was a beg. It was almost a beg. I don't know if you could put beg up here. Maybe somewhere in this line, there's a beg. Baby, I just need you to be a little bit more mindful when you pull in, honey. Okay. And she has been doing it. I mean, really has. And all I did was ask. That's all I did. This is how any of us are going to overcome the challenges in our life. Someone's going to be loving, ask. But if I'd have walked her out there, by the ear, and said, you see what's going on here? You see this? Done with that. One more time, you don't park in here anymore. How you like that, sister? How far do you think I would have got with that? How ruined would my life be? Very ruined. And that works both ways, by the way. I'm boneheaded and stubborn in my own ways. So I'm reading this devotional. This hit me this week. I'm reading this little Christmas devotional leading up to Christmas, because we're going to leave the Sermon on the Mount and go into something else. And this guy who's written it is just interesting. I like his writings because he thinks outside the box. He has this little spot where he says, what you seek is what you find. It's not this text. It's a Christmas text. It's a completely different thing. But listen to this. He says, we all tend to aim for the goal instead of the journey. Listen, this is journey. See, Jesus doesn't even explain what happens when the door opens. That's all this side. You follow me? When you finally knock on someone's door and you really hope to see change in someone's life, that's a whole nother space of issues and challenges. Jesus is just saying, I want you to value the journey of moving toward people and trying and hoping to see people change while you change along the way. And so this is what he writes. This is so good about the journey. How we get there, he says, is where we arrive. Now, when he said that, at first I just went, all right, what in the world do you mean by that? Because I'm going to say it to you again, and then I want you to think about it, and then I'm going to tell you what I think he's saying. How we get there is where we arrive. Then he writes this. So the journey determines the final destination. Okay? You're probably following it. You're picking it up. This is what it says. If we manipulate our way, then we end up with a manipulated and self-made God over here. If you have to manipulate your way or control or demand your way, what do you get on this side? You get what you've been seeking. You arrive how you got there. If that's what you want at the end, somebody to just kowtow to you, somebody that you can dominate, somebody whose heart really isn't in it, then you keep pursuing in a demanding, manipulative way. I have loved that thought. You'll get what you've been seeking, the way you've been seeking it. A lot of marriages, you got exactly how you built it. Your homes, you got exactly what you've been building. Psalm 127, lest the Lord builds the house, you'll labor in vain. That's this when we relate to each other that way. All right? So now there's a seamless connection. God says, this is how I want you to relate to each other. The power of request and loving each other enough and you know. And then Jesus says, you remember he says, this verse 11 is just that verse that says, you know, hey, if you give good gifts to your children, don't you think I will give good gifts? So here comes the thing God says. All of a sudden, there's this shift but seamless connection to, you know what I'm telling you about relating to people? Oh, by the way, that's how I want you to relate to me. Don't manipulate me. Don't try to control me. You'll end up with a God that's not like me. How you seek is what you'll get when you arrive. If you want me, then you talk to me, ask me, because I want a personal relationship with you, just like I have with Gail. Personal, loving. I want you to treat me that way, and I want you to know I want to partner with you. When you ask somebody something, you pull them into this sort of strange constraint of partnership where we're working together to accomplish something, and I'm going to become something for you because you asked, because you need it. And this is God saying, that's the kind of relationship that I want with you. I want to hear what you need, because I want to partner with you on this whole transformation journey. Hey, what are you asking and seeking and knocking for people to give you? Hey, come talk to me about those things, because I'd like to partner with you. I'd like to partner with you on the changes you'd like to see in yourself and in other people. So this is the prayerful side. This is prayerful community. This is the prayerful side of how we relate to each other. You want your spouse to be different? You want to be different? You'd like your kids to be different? You pray. And listen, the word prayer isn't even in here. God says, I want you to relate to me. Talk to me, engage me, partner with me. How about we take Cuba together? How about we take your home together? How about we take your country together? One person at a time. Don't treat them like dogs and hogs. Work with me. How much more will I give you things you need? So when you're at your wit's end and you've done what you can and you've made your asks and requests and you're knocking and nobody's invited you in, where do you turn? You turn to me. You start talking to me about it. And we'll together figure this out. And I'll give you what you need. It may be patience. Because remember, The changes we want to see in ourselves and in others take a lot of time. How many of you remember when you were 18? How about 25? What kind of monkey were you at 25? Even 40. Who I was at 40 now that I'm 59? Don, who are you at your age? I mean, you're a different man. You ever been around Don, sweetest man you ever want to meet in your life? It took 80-something years to get there. To sweeten that boy up, but he's sweet as he can be. Takes time. God says, you need to include me in this. Seamless. So the relational dynamics are the same. God says, I know how to change people. You haven't asked me. In fact, I'm the only one that really can change people. You can't change anyone. So talk to me about them. Involve me. Let's partner together on your home or whatever else needs to happen. You know, when was the last time you really sought God to help a person change? So Dietrich Bonhoeffer, listen to his words, his little book on community called Life Together. Listen to how he describes this idea without even referring to this. He's just describing the idea. And he says it like this: Jesus Christ stands between the lover and others, the others he loves. So you and the people you want to see be different. Jesus stands between them. It's a great picture. Because Christ stands between me and others, I dare not desire direct fellowship with them, as only Christ can speak to me in such a way that I may be saved, so others too can be saved only by Christ himself. In other words, I never forget that in between me and you, in between me and my kids, in between me and my spouse, in between me and my brother, in between me and whoever, family member, anybody, in between is Jesus for us as believers. This means that I must release the other person from every attempt of mine to regulate, coerce, dominate with my love. We can use love to dominate and manipulate. Thus, this spiritual love will speak to Christ about a brother more than to a brother about Christ. That was very convicting to read. I tend to say more to you to get you to change than I say to God about you to change. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer notices a shift there. He says, it knows that the most direct way to others is always through prayer to Christ, and that love of others is wholly dependent upon the truth in Christ. The most direct way to anyone's heart change is prayer. I'm just going to talk to God about that. You do it long enough, and it's amazing how God can come into somebody's life. And you don't demand. You want to hear a great text? Look at this. Remember the text? Remember when Peter said to Jesus, I'm not going to deny you. I'll die. I'll go all the way. He was sort of arrogant. And, you know, Peter had a lot of rough edges. Okay? Way too outspoken. Didn't know when to close his mouth. Very arrogant. And remember what Jesus says to him? Because he says, Satan wants to get you. Listen to what Jesus says to him. You know what? All I can do is pray for you. That's the only hope there is for you, Peter. That your faith won't fail. You know, and you know when somebody's asked and sought and knocked on your life long enough and they finally just go, all I can do is pray for you, buddy. And when you have turned again, one of these days, Peter, you'll see it. And you'll be different. And then you'll be used to help others. And, you know, Peter said to him, Lord, I'll go to death with you, and Jesus is just going to pray. Here's what Jesus doesn't do. Because don't you think in that moment, Jesus literally has told Peter, I need you to lead the whole group. I need you to be the mouthpiece of this whole thing when I leave. Don't you think it would have been tempting for Jesus to coerce him, to rewire his brain, to do something to keep him from failing? Jesus said, all I'm going to do is pray for you, Peter. There was no manipulation. There was no holy truths being thrown at him. There's no pearls thrown at him. It was just God saying, I'm just going to pray for you, Peter. Because he's the ultimate and eternal resource for how people's lives change. When we gather together and all of us imperfect, we put up with each other because we know God's in our hearts and we know God can change us. And God has his ways of doing it. Well, let me get to this verse. Because here's the last verse. So after you come to God with it, Jesus is going to conclude this. So it's big therefore is what that word is. Therefore, so it's all the weight of the text. The weight of the whole sermon is on top of this verse. Let me break it down to you as simple as I can. It's like the test of everything Jesus has been saying. And you can test it by asking yourself a question. You can actually test everything Jesus has said in this entire sermon by asking yourself one question. Would I want it done to me that way? Jesus is like, I don't even have to theologically prove this. Let me just ask you a question. How would you like others to treat you? And you can go right through the whole sermon and go, yeah, I'd like to be treated that way. I haven't been treated that way, and I can't remember how long. I'd love to be treated that way. I'd love to be treated that way. Jesus says, yeah, that's the test. All I want you to do is treat people the way they would treat you. I want you to actually treat them that way. Now, here's the catch. This is the catch. This is really the catch. And Jesus is going to emphasize that at the end of this sermon. This is no small thing. He's going to say, even if they don't do it to you, I want you to do it to them. Now, hold on a minute, Jesus. What do they call you? The Christ, Messiah, I don't know. Whatever it is. Now you've gone too far. That's how far you got to go. So you can run the test this way. How would I want to be talked to? How would I want to be treated? I don't want to be judged. We're all always being judged. One of the worst feelings in the world. We hate it. We don't want that. Okay, stop doing it. That's what Jesus is saying. That then is how you fulfill everything I've said and done throughout the history of Christianity. Genesis 1 all the way to the end. That's what it looks like. It's about love. That's how it looks. That's how it works. Test it on yourself. Love is the good life. You're living a good life, the life God intended. You fulfill the sermon. It's what it means to fully enter the kingdom. See, I'd like to enter the kingdom. It's about love. Remember what Jesus said? Unless your righteousness exceeds the law keeper's version of spirituality, you know, what it means to be good, you won't even come close to this kingdom. Until you can find a way to do even what is not done to you, but you know it ought to be done, the kingdom's not for you. And Jesus will give four illustrations. In January, we'll look at them about what it looks like if the kingdom's for you or if it isn't. Remember, there's a narrow way and there's a broad way. There's a good tree and there's a bad tree. There's a great house and there's a house that's not going to last. You want the indestructible life? This is it. You say, I'd love that. I'd love to be that way. Well, how hard is it to change? We've been saying all along here, you got to do a lot of praying. We got to do a lot of asking of each other. So we're in Cuba. We meet this pastor. We hang with him, Steve and I and Andrew, for about 3 or 4 days. And this guy has been there 31 years in ministry, but he's lived in Cuba all his life, and he wants to reach the country. And this is a man that Cuba has made life very, very hard for. When he was younger, they made him repeat sixth grade 4 times because he was a believer. They stoned him, left him for dead in the street. Put him on house arrest for 3 years. Wouldn't let him leave the house. And spied on the house to make sure. Punished anyone who brought him food. You talk to him today, all he does is smile and joyfully trying to reach Cuba. And when we were leaving, the last thing he said to me, I wrote it down in my little journal. I want to reach the country that's made me suffer so much. You say, how in the world? After that house arrest, they handed him the documents. This is a time when you couldn't leave Cuba. They handed him all the documents he needed to get out of the country. We want you out of this country. And you know what he said to them? No, I'm not leaving. I love Cuba. And I love the people in it. That's what it looks like. Now, let me just say this to you, and I'm going to close. You hear this today, and in it are a lot of little things that you have, nuances you have to pick up on and ask yourself this question. At the end of the day, you got to ask these two questions. Do I really want to receive that kind of love for people or from people? Do I want to be loved that way? Because I will tell you, most of us resist the kind of love we need the most. Because sin and selfishness and ego force us to refuse love even when it comes knocking at our door. Don't be the person whose spouse comes up and says, hey, baby, can you park better? Hey, baby, can you kiss me? Hey, baby, can you serve me? Don't resist it because of some ego or because of some, you'll resist it. You'll resist a spouse's love. You can resist a kid's love. You can resist love from everybody. And you probably are in some way in our lives. We might very well be resisting the kind of love we need the most in our life from everywhere. And that's what sin does. And that's what Jesus hates. And that's why Jesus came to die on a cross, because that will keep you from receiving the love you need the most. Because you're arrogant or you're self-made or you gotta be in control or you have an ego or it can't be about you or you can't humble yourself and say, all right, maybe I'll park different for you. You like it cooked that way? Okay. You prefer me to be softer? You prefer, what do you prefer? I can give it, I can bring it. You know why we don't? We're arrogant. We're sinful and we're proud and we're selfish, can't humble ourselves. And until Jesus Christ breaks into your heart and softens that hard stuff, you can't even accept the love you know you need. You would wish it.
that breaks the heart of God. It breaks God's heart to see you refusing the love that he keeps trying to bring your way.
So I'm asking you today,
if you will accept his love for you, that's the beginning of a heart that will change over time and become more loving. You cannot love this way until you've been loved by him. You just can't. Because it's such a devastating love. It's so hard to receive. Because you wish you didn't need it. But you do. And it's okay to say you need it. I wonder if you could do that right now. Just, man, I need that love. Why won't I take it? Well, let me pray for you. I just hope you will today. Say, I do need it. And I'll take it. Don't just bow your heads, because you could tell God that right now. God, I see I need your love. I need it more than I thought I did when I walked in here. And I want it more than I thought I did too. All you got to do is say, God, I want it. I see what you did for me. I see you did it for me and I didn't deserve it. You did for me what I did not do for you. You showed me how to love this way. Help me receive it. We have. Our lives have been destroyed by rejecting the love you have for us. So today, if you want to give your life to him, you can. In your own heart, right now, you can say, God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for how difficult I have made it on people in my life and you to love me. Forgive me. I want you to change my heart. I pray you'll ask him to do that for you right now. Lord, I pray that in Jesus' name.